Welcome to the John Paul and Mike Show! Early morning edition!
Oh, that was terrible.
Oh, that's terrible! I know we're
what
here at 7 a.m. with the mayor of Victoria, well, but you gotta do way better than that. You wanna try again?
Welcome to the John Paul and Mike Show!
Oh, that's far better. Okay, now we're ready to go. Right.
You sounded like the carnival caller on a Ferris wheel. Come ride my Ferris wheel.
Well, he's really good at it.
You know, this whole IT business thing doesn't work out, I can always get into carnival work.
And radio. I keep saying you've got a perfect voice for radio.
Yeah.
And clearly podcasting.
Yeah. And a face for
Well, let's not talk radio. About the faces. That's why we do radio, you and I.
Yeah.
So we are so friggin' lucky to have the mayor of Victoria, Lisa Helps, on our show today.
I think, is this the second or third time you've been on the show?
Second time.
This is the second time.
Second time with John Paul and Mike.
Yeah.
But the first time was honor. Before, was it before I was mayor?
When you were
when
running.
I was running for mayor. You guys were interviewing all the candidates.
Yeah, we have a picture of you. I think we recorded in your house.
We did in my kitchen, yeah.
And that was fun. And look, here we are 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah.
And you're mayor and you're...
Well, elections are every 4 years, so it's less than 4 years later.
Less than four. Probably, let's say 3.5 years
later. Well, I forgot you were counselor before then.
I was, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you are at the heart of this extraordinary story in Victoria that, frankly, in my personal opinion, isn't getting out there enough. That story of what a great job you've done isn't getting out enough. And you've been trying.
Well,
and people have been not liking that.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I think most people, when they look around the city, it just feels a bit different than it did 3 years ago.
Are you kidding?
You know,
it's extraordinary.
Yeah,
the place is like a it's explosion of economic activity, of new ideas, and so you were trying to tell those ideas.
Yeah,
on the very social platforms. Right?
Oh, right. Yes, that's why we're here.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, and I think we could, for those of you who have been living under a rock, the mayor of Victoria has quit Facebook, and obviously you're not alone. Lots of people have. I guess fundamentally, was this a decision long in the making, or was it more related to the most recent privacy things, or was it a combination?
It's really interesting. It had nothing to do with the privacy thing.
Yeah.
I had written my blog post long before that scandal broke, and you know, Monday we were announcing the fire hall, so that wasn't a good day to post my post. So it was, and then you know, Wednesday I was too busy. Thursday was the perfect day, and you know, coincidentally, that's when everything really blew up with Cambridge Analytica. No, I've been contemplating it for probably the last couple months, and I can't even remember what gave me the initial idea. Who said maybe this is a good, or maybe it was just like I'm done. I don't remember, but I had been before posting my blog post last Thursday. I'd been weaning myself off for the last month, so you know, and it's like quitting coffee or drugs, right?
Sure.
I never had to quit drugs, thankfully, but you know, you kind of, okay, I deleted it from my phone. Ah, okay, that feels different, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, so really, I mean, it has nothing to do with the privacy piece. I mean, I'm sure that's of concern to some people.
I think it was curiosity.
Yeah.
Because it was literally the day, it felt like the day the Cambridge Analytica thing exploded, which has this enormous Victoria connection, right?
And
so then it all became like connecting the dots.
Yeah.
And it was like, really? Did she actually do this? Was this all planned?
So, okay. So what does it mean? I guess, you know, obviously you're a politician, you're running again. Will your campaign be on Facebook? And you just won't sort of be personally doing it?
I think we're looking to campaign without Facebook.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got some really great people working on my team who have all sorts of ideas about how we can do that.
Interesting.
And, you know, if you look at the whole thing that's blown up with Brexit and Trump, you know, why would you use Facebook for a campaign? I mean, even there were murmurings that even in Calgary's municipal election, some Russian bots had some role to play.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try to
but
convince you otherwise in this podcast.
Are you? Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
But
all
nonetheless, just to really understand why you left.
Why, yeah.
So what's that all
yeah,
about?
Yeah, really important question. So I've been using social media. I got on Twitter in 2009. I can't remember when I got on Facebook, but probably about 10 years ago. So I've had a long relationship with this platform. It's not like I kind of dipped my toe in the water and then thought, ew, yuck, I'm leaving. And when I was a counselor and when I was running for mayor and when I was first elected, it was a really useful platform. For sharing, you know, hey, here's an idea, folks, you know, what are your thoughts? And there'd actually be a conversation. There'd actually be, because there would be the moderates would still be on my page. And increasingly over time, people, you know, I'd post or someone would post or I'd post, you know, hey, there's this great community event happening. And, you know, five comments in, people started attacking each other about something completely different or nothing at all. And it really became, so that's kind of reason number one. It's simply not a good place for civil dialogue and civic discourse and the sharing of ideas. And that's really at the root of democracy.
Right.
So that's reason number one. Reason number two is it's really, really addictive. And, you know, not just for me, but and you probably both read my blog post and part of the research that I did, there's that study where they, you know, followed 100,000 regular people with an app that kind of monitored every time they touched their phone. And the average person touches their phone 2,617 times a day. Mm. And that really concerns me, not only for my own mental health and well-being, but as a society, if we're that addicted to our phones, how are we're always distracted. Always. And so how are we supposed to focus as a community and as a country on the big issues? So that's reason number two. And reason number three.
Well, that's a whole podcast in itself.
The whole podcast. and number three is a good podcast. I mean, maybe you guys could follow these lines of flight and go on number three, go find a scientist. There's a guy at Royal Roads who's really delving into this. This media, social media distraction, phones, this constant kind of touching and swiping and It's actually shrinking our brains. It's shrinking our brains in the prefrontal cortex, which is kind of the reasoning and rationing and empathy function. Mm. So I'm kind of, you know, worried about my own brain, but also like think about a whole generation of young people who are
lacking empathy,
lacking the ability to connect, lacking the ability to sit down and do this. And, you know, lots of anxiety and insecurity. Oh, not enough people like my post. Maybe I'm, you know, inherently flawed. So those are all the reasons.
Those are damn good reasons.
They're all good
reasons. Yeah, and I think each of them could be pushed into a little bit more.
Jay Baer, I'm pretty sure it was Jay Baer, one of our keynote speakers from a few years ago at Social Media Camp, pointed to a research paper that showed that people had a shorter attention span than goldfish. I don't know if you ever heard.
I mean
that
now stat. Or for
that was forever. Then.
Okay.
Yeah, and basically they studied goldfish and how long they could focus on, you know,
something,
just some random object,
and we have less.
We had less attention span than goldfish.
That is not very good.
Yeah, I 100% empathize with you. I guess. Part of me, and this is the part of me that got excited about social media. And I think you and I were around the same time. I think
absolutely.
I think it was 2009 when I got on Twitter, and Twitter was just, it was like the world came to your doorstep.
Yeah.
And you could just, you know, you could reach out to people that were just completely inaccessible before that, including politicians, but less so in the beginning, but certainly, you know, influential people in the world that, you know, had great wisdom that they could share, right? Mm-hmm. And it was just, there was just so much excitement and so much, you know, enthusiasm about what is humankind capable of now that we're all able to communicate in such a constructive way. And then we fast forward 9 years and it's like, what happened?
Yeah,
like,
like,
it became this toxic waste dump. And I can't even imagine because I'm not a politician. And I struggle with the toxic negativity that I see just in my own feed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you see people and they, like, people will post things without, you know, without authenticating any truism.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll say, oh, by the way, you know, that's completely false and it's been proven false.
Yeah.
People don't even care anymore. Like,
and then as soon as those things that aren't true are posted, they become true because they're online.
This is anyway. So I empathize with you. The problem I have and my concern is And it's kind of like any technology, right? You could make a great case that the invention of the telephone was terrible for humanity, right? Because, you know, dinner time got interrupted and people started making prank phone calls and obscene phone calls and, you know, all the terrible things that came along with telephone technology. But on some, it was a pretty good innovation, mm-hmm. right?
For sure.
And it changed the world. It allowed the world to get a little smaller, right? And I feel like there's a bit of throwing the baby out with the bathwater in this context. And it's not about you, the mayor of Victoria, being one person. And in some ways, I actually respect what you've done because it's shed light on this problem. But do you think that there's any vindication for this platform? Is there any hope for humanity that one day we will have a platform that can bring us all a little closer and have civil discourse and be able to, you know, share and communicate and, you know, make the world a better place? Or is that just unrealistic?
It's a really good question. And, you know, I don't know the answer. Of course, my hope is that there is a platform where, like how Facebook started out. The problem is, though, I don't know the answer to your question. I think the problem is, and I don't know when this started. I don't know if this kind of is how Facebook evolved. But the way that the algorithms are set, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like if you post something that you like or hate, they feed you more of same. Mm-hmm. And so it's a mind narrowing rather than mind expanding platform. Whereas Twitter's not, mm-hmm. right? Like Twitter, there's still the ability. I mean, I know that there are algorithms on there as well, but there's still the ability to not be bombarded with self-fulfilling messages that just, you know, create that echo chamber effect.
Right.
So I'm going to remain on Twitter. I'm going to remain on Instagram. I'm going to keep my blog. And maybe there'll be some new social platform that comes along that I'll experiment with as well. But I think that Facebook has become something that's an inhibitor rather than an enhancer to the work that I need to do as mayor.
Yeah. Okay. So,
I just wanted to ask. So in my opinion, the only platform more toxic than Facebook is Twitter.
Is that right?
Am I just using it wrong? Or is it because, yeah. my politics is more conservative?
Well, there isn't that opportunity.
You know, Twitter is a lot more, I think there's a lot more progressive left, you know, sort of voices there. Is it just because of that? Or is it, would you say that Twitter is more, you know, quote, left wing?
I don't know. I mean, and to be honest, I'm not.
You don't necessarily identify left, right.
Yeah, but, no. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of my Twitter feed, I should probably check it more than I do, right?
Right.
So it feels different somehow. And a lot of people, and I think it maybe feels different to the user, because a lot of people who had positive or interesting or neutral things to say just simply abandoned my Facebook page. I'd run into people in coffee shops. They're like, oh my, okay, this is a good story. My neighbor, who I don't know that well, he's my neighbor. He lives a couple of houses down. He showed up at my door one night. Sadly, I wasn't home, with a bottle of scotch and two glasses. And he's like, I just read your Facebook page. And, you know, I'm coming over to... You know,
to console you.
You know, so I think, and that hasn't necessarily happened on Twitter. I mean, there's all sorts of mean stuff on Twitter, but maybe it's shorter, or maybe it's like Twitter. Also, there's like people like Ian is a big deal, or like people who use these really weird things.
There isn't as much an opportunity. I think, Paul, that you've withdrawn from some of your commentary on Facebook, because I read some of the folks that responded to you.
Yeah.
It was vile.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't
yeah.
even believe humanity can go there.
Yeah.
And on yours, Lisa, we actually talked about this a year ago.
The difference, though, John, is on mine, it's very rarely directed to me. And I, you know, and that's kind of my style on social media, is I pose a question. I will often put forward something, you know, a little more provocative, but... what happens is the people in the feed start to attack each other.
That happens on my page too.
Yeah.
I'm not. I can take it. Like I didn't get into this job because I couldn't handle criticism. That's like it's
well,
fine.
You have to grow a thick
skin. You
know.
Well, but you know what? I hear that a lot. I'll go back to the thick skin thing in a moment. But so when people attack me on my Facebook page, it gets kind of boring or tiresome. But that I can handle. That's, I don't want to say it's okay, because it's never okay to talk with another human being in that way. But what really, I mean, the bigger reason for leaving is the way that people were treating each other.
Right.
This is our community. And if my platform was contributing in any way, creating a space for people to talk with each other in that way, you know.
Well, okay. So, here, I'll throw some stuff on. First of all, I think it's worth challenging the assumption that we thought that these social media tools would somehow be a platform for civil discourse. They never said that. They never, no, at no point was...
The promise was underlying.
Well, but hold on, let me just finish.
Yep.
So there's that piece. And then we have chatted in the past around the comments on your Facebook page are extraordinarily vile, misogynistic, cruel, evil, like pure evil. Mm. You know, to think that those people are walking around in our community, it is insane. Are we really talking about a platform or are we talking about human behavior?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And is that the real issue? And to me, it is.
Well, yeah. I think there is a
human. It's not the platform.
There's a human.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point.
And therefore, are we letting that win? You know, how do we deal with that kind of evil attitude about life? Do we let, okay, so somewhere somebody's going, I've won. Lisa helps left Facebook.
Right.
Yeah. I've won.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And I'm going, we can't do that. Lisa, I want you to go back on Facebook, but with different rules. First of all, I think that video is a brand new way of communicating and a very effective way of communicating your personality.
I know. I was thinking of becoming a YouTuber.
Which doesn't entirely reflect on Facebook, on that platform, or on Twitter. And put videos, links to video of you even selfieing yourself while you're driving your bike around town would be so cool.
Yeah, you know, John, that's a great idea. I don't think that needs to be done on Facebook. It's funny. I was like, well, maybe I will become a YouTuber. Maybe every week I'll do something and post it on my
And then
YouTube
link
channel.
It to Facebook.
You can link it to your Facebook page.
Remove the comments.
I've considered that. I really have considered that. And I've considered people are like, why don't you block people? As soon as I block people, as soon as I remove the comments, I'll be accused of shutting down dialogue.
Okay. Then I'll get back to Paul and then I'll shut up. So Paul's piece was, you know, this notion that we thought that people would have civil. I don't believe in that. I'm extraordinarily optimistic about humankind. At the same time, understanding our huge weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is this will never go away. We're not going to somehow come into some utopian place where we're all treating each other civilly. It hasn't happened. Even before technology, mm-hmm. we treated ourselves poorly, you know, and it was manifested through different ways. So I would suggest you have so many positive messages. Let's use these platforms, continue to use them, but be smart, outsmart the bad guys.
Well, and
that's what I'd like to leave with you today.
Yeah.
This is the thing, right? The bad guys are in the minority. The problem is they're so loud and they're so toxic that they chase out the good people, mm-hmm. right? And I feel like that's kind of what's happened here.
Yeah.
And with you. And anybody.
And 100% not placing any blame because mm-hmm. you know, I don't put up with the crap you put up with and have for years. You know, somebody asked me if I wanted to run for mayor in Souk. And I'm like, why would I want to, you know, get like a job where part of the expectation is that you're abused routinely by, you know, by people on social media, but all, and beyond, right? Like why, you know, that's...
I think it's now part of the shtick.
Yeah.
Like if you want to become a public servant,
yeah.
you have to know how to operate within this milieu
It's terrible.
But you know, here's...
It shouldn't be that.
Kind of a counterpoint. And so some people will say, oh, well, no wonder she's off Facebook. Everybody hates the bike lanes. Everybody hates the direction the city's going. And therefore, you know, it's not that there's anything wrong with Facebook. It's that there's a problem with the direction the city's going. And that's why all the backlash, which I don't buy. But you know, in this space, my office that we're sitting in right now, every 2 weeks, although sometimes I go out in the community, yesterday I was at the senior center in Cook Street, every 2 weeks, this table gets pushed back here. We order some coffee in, there's some chairs, and we have a community drop-in. And it's me sitting with the community. And anyone can come in. There's no sign-up sheet. There's no appointment. You just wander in, pour yourself a cup of coffee, and sit down. And some people have come in really, really angry, upset about what, you know, various topics over the 4 years. And then we talk. And there's that moderating influence of the other humans in the room who are also interested in the discussion, and they start to chime in. And we talk some more. And we sort it out together. And to a person, no one has ever stormed out of here.
And that can't be duplicated through technology.
Exactly.
Ever.
No.
Ever.
Yeah.
So the expectation that these platforms will do that is wrong.
I don't think that's the expectation that I was just talking about, though, John. What I was talking about was the ability for the people who genuinely care about dialogue and see the value of it coming together and having that dialogue.
Well, I think those people are around.
Yeah.
And but there's another set of humanity that doesn't believe in that.
Yeah.
And they can flourish in this unaccountable way.
Yeah.
And as soon as you see them, okay, I've been involved with sales all my life, pre-internet, post-internet. And I'm sometimes asked to talk about how do you sell successfully. And I'll talk to, let's say, university kids about that. And I go, well, fundamentally, you don't stop until the client or the prospect tells you to your face why they won't buy the product. And there's this big silence after I say that, because they never get to the point where the thought that you actually speak to somebody face to face.
Yeah, interesting.
Like, that's all lost.
Yeah.
At the end. So my, you know, one of my suggestions to you in this encouraging of staying on the platform is why don't we, Paul and I will join you. I don't know if I'm just volunteering you here. Let's ask these folks to come and talk to you.
I have repeatedly.
You? Come on.
Repeatedly.
And they don't come.
No, not once. Dear, you know, thank you for your comments. Thanks for your perspective. Come and have a cup of coffee. Here's the drop-in link. Here's the drop-in link here. Over and
over. Well, then they truly are cowards.
I don't know what
it is. End of story, they're cowards.
And John, you said something earlier. You said that you know, all these people are walking around in our community. No, they're not. They're sitting behind their keyboards in the community. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. You know what?
They're truly cowards.
Yeah, but the most compassionate part of myself, which is where I do try to turn often, is they've probably been bullied. They've probably been hurt. They probably don't feel like they belong in the community. And ironically, the best antidote to a sense of not belonging is to actually dip your toe in the water and go, you know, come to the community drop-in for a cup of coffee. Even if you don't say anything, just sit here and...
Yeah. And it's in that spirit, I want you to go back onto Facebook, okay? Because we can't let that win.
But I don't feel like it's winning. I really don't feel like it's winning. I mean, I'm sure that maybe there are like five people cheering like, oh, good, she's off Facebook. But for me, the big win is building a community where dialogue is possible. And I think, you know, going back, Paul said something a couple minutes ago that made me think about this. I think as a city, like as a city hall and the engagement department and so on, I think one of, you know, we've done a lot better with engagement over the last 4 years. You know, we've gone from what, 14 events in 2014 to 83 community engagement events in 2017. So there's a lot where, you know, we're doing this, we're doing that. We ask people, what do you think? What do you want? What are your ideas? But it's always around a specific project. And I think one of the things that we can do and that I'd like to do in the second term is convene people, kind of similar to how I do in the community drop-ins, but in a bit of a larger format, to have a conversation about whatever's on people's minds. To get, you know, what I do at the beginning of the community drop-in, I say, okay, what's the agenda? And people tell me what they want to talk about, and that sets the agenda. Mm-hmm. So maybe doing
doing it elsewhere.
Well, oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to get down here.
Yeah, no, like even, yeah, absolutely.
You know, or out in Fernwood.
Yeah.
Or out by James Bay.
Yeah.
God forbid, out in your land. Where are you from again?
Soupland?
That's good. Yeah, moving the community drop-in. Moving the community drop-in around the neighborhoods is a good idea. And I do that. I go to Cook Street once in a while just because the seniors have invited me. And so I think that's a good venue. It's, you know, there are usually in Cook Street kind of 30 to 40 people who come. Here, kind of pack in 20 people, 25 people. But wouldn't it be neat if on a regular basis we convene people upstairs or at, you know, the conference center, where, you know, and we say, okay, what's the agenda? And, you know, 10 topics come up, 10 tables.
Yeah.
And with the purpose simply being to discuss those topics.
And keep inviting those folks that are sitting in their keyboard in the dark, that are clearly cowards.
Yeah, or
that
clearly,
have
or clearly,
clearly been bullied.
Clearly
and
hurt.
Clearly have issues, and they're venting it at you.
Yeah.
I mean, let's give them some light. They're clearly they're finding a way to express evil through these platforms. And to your point, Paul, I get it. What percentage of our total populace is those people?
I don't know.
Well, they're a disproportionate sense because I never meet those people in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I don't see them. I don't talk
to
them.
Well, and most people walk up to me on the street, random strangers, and in the same way that, and say, "You're doing a great job. Keep up the good work. I'm so excited about the direction of the city." You know, and you know, at one time I had someone walk up on Government Street and was like, "I hate the work you're doing." Well, okay, thanks. And I was like, "Thanks so much for sharing."
Yeah.
But mostly, you know, face to face, and it's people.
Just that generic though. Just no specifics.
Or, yeah. Just yeah. Yeah, yesterday I was walking with, do you guys know Pierre? He's the owner or the manager of the cinema, the Cineplex.
Yeah, right.
Everyone knows Pierre. So he and I had a cup of coffee and we were walking. He was walking me back to City Hall and we were crossing the street. And at Government and Pandora, there was a mom and a kid. She rolled down her window. She's like, "We love you." I was like, "I love you too." You know, so that stuff happens. And so I think generally kind of the mood of the city is that.
Well, why don't we talk about that? Because I think we've beaten this Facebook thing to death. I don't think she's going to rejoin today.
I think as soon as we're done, she will be.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
yeah.
We'll,
yeah, yeah. We're going to help her.
We'll be the catalyst.
We're going to help her with all these issues.
You know, since we have a few extra minutes, why don't we talk about some of the stuff that's happening in the city?
You okay with that?
Yeah, sure.
Do we have a few extra minutes?
We're good. Yeah, we got a few extra minutes.
I hear the grumbling about. Bike lanes. So what's the background on that? I kind of get the sense we have the city of the past, we're building the city of the future. Is that is that kind of the...
Yeah, we're building the bike lanes to make it easier for people to park and drive downtown. I mean, really ostensibly that is one of the goals. It's a fundamentally misunderstood goal. But for every person who lives within bikeable distance, so Fairfield, Fernwood, even Oak Bay, Burnside Gorge, but particularly those neighborhoods that are kind of going to be connected to the first part of the network, if those people feel like they've got a safe and easy way to get downtown, they're going to start leaving their cars at home. And this is what happens in every other city. When the infrastructure is built, the people who would bike but don't because they don't feel safe, they start biking. And ostensibly what that does is it frees up parking and decreases congestion for those people like you who have to drive in from Souk, or people who have to drive in from Langford. So that is one of the thrusts of the bike network, to make it easier for people to park and drive who are coming from afar. So that's, you know, it's part of the transportation ecosystem.
I had and is that modeled on Portland or another?
It's modeled on just about everywhere. So when we put the bike network together, we didn't know what we were doing. So we had an international team of experts come and work with us. So people from Portland, people from Copenhagen, people from Brazil, like really around the world, who have experience building these networks. And really, the network is key. And, you know, right now we're just in the very beginning phases of building the network. So there's all sorts of clunkiness, right? Fort doesn't connect to Pandora, doesn't connect to Wharf, doesn't connect across the new bridge. But it's just like electricity, right? The electric wires go to everyone's house. They don't stop short, right? Yeah. So you're fully electrified.
Yeah, we should have been videotaping you. Put this on YouTube.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It really personalizes the message.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's probably a fair bit of, and I think for the people that are on those streets, the businesses, there was probably a lot of communication. Some people will just be unhappy. But I think for a lot of people, it's just kind of like, oh, whoa, what are they doing here? This is interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
So I guess my question is, you know, could the vision have been communicated more effectively, or was that just unrealistic?
I think it's really hard to communicate that kind of thing because it's putting new infrastructure into an old city. It's going to be disruptive. It's interesting though, if you look at Broughton Street right now, that's all under construction too because we're doing some water main replacement, and it feels just like Fort Street, except Fort Street is the bike lane, so there's kind of different energy around it. I think this is where courage and leadership is really required. It would have been very easy to be, oh, okay, you know what, we're not going to do it. We're not going to, you know, you're right, you people who don't want them, we're not going to do it. But I think that would be really short-sighted because the city is growing. You can see all the rental buildings and condos that are being built downtown. We're going to have 10,000 people living downtown in the next 10 to 15 years. If every single one of them feels the need to bring a car because they feel like there's no safe way to get around or there's no easy way to get around, we're going to have automatic gridlock.
Right.
So too as the West Shore grows, right? If we can get transit nailed and if we can get a bike network in town so people who live close can leave their cars at home, it's all part of the transportation ecosystem. So I think stopping would have been a really short-sighted decision and kind of lacking in courage. What's happening on Fort Street right now, there's a lot of construction. It's really disruptive. And interestingly, there's the underground infrastructure that we're doing at the same time. And we're finding all sorts of surprises under the street, oil tanks.
Get
under
out.
The street. Yeah, because there's, you know, like old leases with buildings to lease part. Anyway, so it's disruptive. It's taking a lot of time. But I'm starting to hear kind of senses of optimism from Fort Street business owners like, huh, Fort Street's going to feel a little bit more like a village.
Right.
Or Fort Street, you know, I've also heard people saying, you know what, I wouldn't have crossed before because it felt too wide, but now, you know, I'm more enticed to go to that restaurant on the other side of the street. So,
well, I got a couple things, maybe three. So you and I have known each other for some time now, before you were counselor.
Yeah.
Early days of Victoria Micro Community Lending. Right from the, and then I was involved with your mayoral campaign. And I remember very distinctly having conversations with you and others around the way to save Victoria is there's only one way. That's to bring people here to live here.
Yeah, downtown. That,
we made that point clear. That was in your platform. We can go back and check the videos that were produced. Bringing people downtown was a key. Anyone with any kind of objective viewpoint, of which we just talked about, maybe there are not that many online, is going to see that you can't have cars with that. There's not enough room.
There's not enough.
There's room. A natural progression to go to bike lanes. So that was all missed. And to your point, maybe that could have been communicated better.
Mm.
That if we're going to bring people into town, that
makes sense.
They got to move around.
Yeah.
This has to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and there's so much value to having a downtown that's vibrant and alive. And I think I've made this comparison in our, maybe even in our previous interview of, you know, this, when I was in Calgary, and it was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was like a ghost town because everyone had packed up and gone home for the day. And like,
yeah, and now the beauty of here is now this is home.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Downtown is becoming home to people.
Yeah. Okay, so for those people that think the John in the John, Paul, and Mike is some 32-year-old man who's really fit with a lot of hair and a thin waistline, that is not the case. I'm a 60-year-old man. I've got a very wide waistline, and I got to tell you a story. So I try to bike when I can. It's not a natural place for me, but I do. I love it. And I came downtown about a year ago after the Pandora bike lane had been completed. That's the route I took. I would come sort of through Vic West. I'd come through Vic West, and I come across the bridge and into town. And so up I come Pandora, and I'm on the bike lane. And all of a sudden, that entire piece between sort of Wharf and Government felt completely different. Mm-hmm. It felt like a village.
Yeah.
Like I stopped, and I looked.
Yeah.
I wanted to partake. It was really weird.
Yeah.
And I was going to phone you and tell you about that. So I don't think that kind of messaging is getting out. Like these impacts of biking. Do I get the people that come to work in suits with computers? Don't want to bike? Yes. Do they need to park their car somewhere? Yes. I know you're dealing with that. And the construction, I get all that. But there's a huge amount of really neat stuff that happens around retaining people and developing community that is happening in Victoria that's not happening anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So I congratulate you on that.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, I love that part. I just stopped.
Well, and I think...
You know, I wasn't worried about where the cars were.
And I
looked and, wow, there are people. They're just sitting around.
I think the other issue, too, is it's not the case yet, but it's certainly coming where office space as a thing becomes less and less important in a connected world, too, right? I know my wife, when she works a regular contract that she doesn't go to the office ever, right? Whereas the same contract 3 years ago, she had to come downtown and park and
all
that other, you know. And so I think it's, we've got these downtowns all over, dotted all over the Western world, And, you know, if they're not going to be communities and they're going to just hollow out, that's a dreadful, terrible thing to imagine, right?
So, I mean, I've worked with Stu for a long time out in the West Shore, and it's really tough moving around the West Shore. And I know that he has very concrete visions around how to solve that. But this Victoria has a completely different feel to it. Mm-hmm. And it's really geared towards the people that live in Victoria, mm-hmm. not entirely the people that drive to Victoria.
Yeah, but also the
and aren't the you people, the mayor of Victoria?
Yeah, but also people. It's really important to me that people are able to drive to Victoria. Mm-hmm. That if your wife needs to come downtown to work, that she has a place to park. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. the beauty of creating the bike network and good transit, if we can get there, is that it will make
you
it
will
easier.
Get there. We will get there.
It makes it easier for people from far away to drive into town, and that I think that's the piece that's missed most about the bike lanes. The bike lanes aren't for the people from Langford or Souk, although there are some people who commute in by bike from Langford, and they're certainly welcome to. It's for the people in Victoria to get to work and leave their cars at home, thus freeing up parking and decreasing congestion for people coming into town. And again, that happens everywhere else.
So we've had a nice time with Mayor Helps. We've talked. We've literally solved the world problems.
You would think that the only problems in the world are Facebook and bike lanes.
I have one last question before we let you go, because you have a busy city to run. When you're this whole thing, we've talked with other politicians. We've had other mayors. What's this whole thing around worship and your worship? Where does that come from, and how do we address you?
I don't know.
So if I'm saying goodbye to you, do we go? Goodbye,
no,
your worship.
No, you really don't. No, I've got just about everybody in the city, except down at the ledge where they can't help themselves, and Jack Lohman at the museum. Just simply call me Mayor Helps.
Okay.
So your worship, it is the formal term, but I feel like I outlawed that at the very first council
Good
meeting
for you.
I chaired.
I always felt uncomfortable.
Yeah,
there.
Well, because, the very first council meeting I chaired, you know, the first staff member came up and said, your worship and members of council, and I said, you know, would you mind? Mayor Helps and members of council. And then someone must have sent an email to all the staff right away, because all the other staff presentations that day began Mayor Helps and members of council.
Oh, fantastic.
So I feel like your worship is a separator. It puts me somewhere other than beside you, and I don't like that.
I'm pretty sure that's how I addressed you the first time.
Probably.
When you became mayor.
Yeah, and I mean,
Courtesy?
More as a
ribbing.
Yeah.
Well, Mayor Helps. Lisa,
yes.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you guys. What a pleasure.
Thanks for allowing us to explore this a little bit more. Hopefully we can get you again before November. Paul, thanks for coming
October,
up. For,
October this
is it
year.
October
20th. Yeah, they moved it up.
Oh, wow. So before north, Halloween.
Yeah, so people in the north wouldn't have to knock on doors in the dark.
Okay.
That's sensible.
Paul, you've come from Soukland.
Yeah.
And boy, thank you.
Thanks, John.
All right.
Good to see you.
Yeah, okay. Till next time.
Thanks,
Lisa.